Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings, Ulu family, and we welcome you to the Uplifting Us weekly Dare to Win call. We're here every Thursday from 9 p.m. until 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And Dare to Win is the place where we have a sobering conversation about the economic plight of Black people and the imperative that we build the global economic machinery that will free us and once again put us on the path to making history. And once we are finished with the music, we're going to continue on with the conversation. And thank you so much for being here with us. Family, thank you for being here with us for the Uplifting Us Dare to Win call. I'm Brother Thurman, a member of Uplifting Us, and we're here every Thursday night, and we invite you to take notes. It's essential that you take notes because we really got to get what's going on with our people and what's necessary for us to take control of our communities, and certainly from the Uplifting Us model, take economic control of our community that can do much to alleviate the suffering that's going on and injustices, as well as assuring that we leave legacies well into the future for our future generations, for the babies. And we are available. Everybody on the telephone line, the telephone number, in about 15 or 20 minutes, you're welcome to call in with comments or questions to 929-477-2789, 929-477-2789, and press the number 1 on your phone keypad. And also, if you desire or have a need to listen by internet radio, you go to www.usliftingus.com. That's usliftingus.com. And when you come to the home page, just look for the tab that says Ulu Radio and click on that. And when that link opens up, you scroll down and look for Listen Live and you click on Listen Live. And we are heard around the world, and we are anxious to carry this conversation forward. Is very, very vital. And joining me on the call, our guest tonight is Brother Unkti, and he's also an Uplifting Us member. Brother Unkti, give your greetings to the family tonight.
Greetings, Brother Thurman, and greetings to the Ulu family. I must say it's good to be back. We certainly apologize for not being able to broadcast last week. We we had some technical difficulties, but I'm excited and looking forward to tonight's discussion, Brother Thurman. Hope you are too.
Absolutely, absolutely. So family members, once again, please participate. Our liberation requires our participation. And the things that are being that will be brought forth tonight, please make note of it and put that into your brain computer and let it become a part of you, because we've got to turn our attention towards whatever, as the ancient Africans said, the greater good. And the greater good is that we take economic control and we stop the madness of consuming, recklessly consuming and enriching other people that are doing many, many things to destroy us, and that brutality continues on. So, Brother Umti, this is a very vital topic, Ujamaa Economy, the only path to African liberation. Once again, the topic tonight is Ujamaa Economy, the only path to African liberation. And Brother Umti, if you would give us some insight on what gave you the that topic, and what inspired you to come up with that.
Certainly, Brother Thurman. Many of us are familiar with the writing of the Chinese military strategist Sun Tzu, who said to make a noise in the east and strike in the west as a military strategy to cause your opponent to look in the wrong direction while you focus your energies and your resources in the area where you really want to attack. And I say that as a way of introduction for tonight's conversation, because ever since January the 6th and the insurrection at the United States Capitol, the media has bombarded us with a political conversation, pictures of the insurrection, the aftermath, the investigation as to how it could have happened, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so all of the focus, all of our focus is being directed into the political arena. There is a far even more deeper issue begging for our attention, and that is an understanding of the economics that's going on at the same time. So in other words, rather than being distracted and falling into the political conversation, people who are interested in liberation and black freedom, we have to be having a conversation about the economics that's involved in what's swirling around us right now. So to get us started, when we say that Ujamaa Economy, the only path to African liberation, the first question as a starting point, I would simply say, is what is an economy? And the answer is it is a system of production and distribution of goods and services used by people to meet their material needs, that is food, clothing, and shelter, right? Equally important, the economic system also translates a people's values and philosophy into concrete expression. Said differently, the economy of a people is the manifestation of what they think is important. It's the manifestation of how they are related to their deity, how they are related to land, how they are related to one another. So an economy does two critical functions. It helps the people to organize their energy so that they can provide for their food, clothing, and shelter, whether we're talking the education of children, the care of those who are sick, the care of those who are elderly. All of that is organized in the economy. And, as I said, equally important, it's the place where the values of the people can be seen. You know, you can tell me you're a great fan of democracy, but then when you deny people access to the ballot box, what's really being revealed is the truth about how you feel about democracy. So if you deny it to some, then what really is being revealed is you're more about domination than democracy. So the economy makes clear what are the values of the people. So that's point number one, Brother Thurman.
Good.
So, with that as kind of a backdrop, let me move to the second part. We just talked about the economy. So what do we mean, at least in Us Lifting Us, when we say Ujamaa? Now, most of us became acquainted with the term Ujamaa as a result of Dr. Malana Karenga's creation of the Kwanzaa celebration, I think going back to 1966. And in his descriptions of the Kwanzaa celebration, it was a way of creating a ritual that allowed our people to celebrate the values of unity and self-determination, collective work and responsibility, cooperative economics, purpose, creativity, and faith. So the term Ujamaa we came to understand as being cooperative economics, to maintain our own stores and shops and to profit together from them. One quite as fulfilling as we need that definition to be, and Mwalimu Julius Nyerere, the first president of Tanzania, he fleshed that definition out a lot more for us. And what he said is that Ujamaa's literal meaning is familyhood, so that it brings to the mind of our people the idea of mutual involvement in the family as we know it. So what Nyerere was trying to help us to understand is that when we think about our economic system, he was pushing us to think in terms of what we in Ulu call family-centered economics. Another way of phrasing that would be familyhood creates an economy. In other words, what's primary is how people are related to one another, where there is mutual respect, where there is love for each other, where there is a desire and a commitment to serve one another. That in and of itself begins to guide how we go about organizing ourselves to produce the things that we need. Again, back to food, clothing, and shelter. So in a family setting, if we think about our own families, and we're talking in the positive terms, you know, in the best of our family traditions, then we would say, how do we treat each other? I need food, you need clothing, this person needs their child education, that person needs care for their elders. How do we accomplish those tasks in an environment of mutual love and mutual respect? And you notice the issue of profit and how much money is going to be made hasn't even entered into the conversation, because the focus is meeting these primary and basic needs. Now, the other thing that I need to touch on at the same time, Brother Thurman, is when Nyerere said familyhood, he was thinking about that in the African sense of the word, not the European sense of the word. And what I'm saying is that in the African context of familyhood, that's the understanding that there is no such thing as a first, second, or third cousin. All the children born in the community of the same age group are all brothers and sisters. We don't think about auntie and uncle, because all of the elders are mama and baba. So In the African sense of Ujamaa, in the African sense of familyhood, what we're talking about is the extended family. And these attitudes about how we respect one another, how we express our love for each other, how we care for one another, extends to a very large group of people. So in other words, it can't be individualistic where I'm only concerned about me, myself, and I. Get all you can, work as hard as you can, get all you can, then sit on the can. That mindset has no place in an Ujamaa economic system, because this system is driven by what is in the communal good, what is in the collective good. This is an expression of familyhood as it provides the foundation for economic activity. Let me pause there. There may be some questions, Brother Thurman.
Yes, family, you should be taking notes. There's been some powerful and vital messages that's been said in the last few minutes in the early part of this call. And you are invited to join the conversation, because we must participate in our liberation. And please be writing down, taking these notes. It's vital, so many precious jewels that Brother Ongti has brought forward. And you can reach us by telephone at 929-477-2789, 929-477-2789, and press the number 1 on your keypad when you're ready to speak. And if you are busy, taking notes, that's wonderful. And so, Brother Ongti, continue filling us with some more uplifting messages of how we go forth and the reason behind that and the historical relevance to what you're talking about.
Thank you again, Brother Thurman. So continuing on our understanding of Ujamaa economy, we talked about the ethos, if you will, or the paradigm that guides how we interact each other, being driven by this concept of extended family and family relationships. So in an Ujamaa economy, the primary values are unity, are self-determination, are all of the things that we celebrate in Kwanzaa. It's also in terms of how we in Ulu talk about this, it's also the values of Maat: truth, balance, harmony, and reciprocity. So these are the values that guide an Ujamaa economy and an Ujamaa community. Now, the thing that we have to be very careful about, Brother Thurman, and I think many of us on the call have already witnessed this happening, is every so many years we start seeing messages on the internet. People we know start calling us and say, "Hey, there's an Ujamaa cooperative out there, and if you put $500 down in 4 weeks, that'll turn into $4,000. And they have a slick presentation on the internet where they talk about the African concept of Isusu, and it sounds like it's the real thing. What we have to be mindful of, and the way to always pierce through those kinds of pretenses, is to ask the question: who owns this economic model? In an Ujamaa economy and in an Ujamaa system, we are building cooperative enterprises. That is, the businesses that we launch are cooperatives that are mutually owned by the collective. So in Us Lifting Us, for example, the co-op unit is purchased for $1,000. Now, if I have 10 co-op units, Brother Thurman, and you only have one, when we come together to do the business of running the co-op, I have one vote, you have one vote. So even though I may have more units than you, when it comes down to the actual making decisions that guide the future for our business, you and I are equal because we only have one vote apiece. Now, that's real democracy. For those who own shares of stock in most of your major corporations, whether it's Nike or Amazon or some other thing, you know that based on the number of shares that you own, those are the number of votes that you wield in deciding what direction the company goes in. So if one person owns 1,000 shares of Nike stock and someone else owns 50,000 shares of Nike stock, when they come down to making a decision about what's going to happen, the person with 50,000 shares has that much more clout. That's not democratic. That's a system based on domination. And so while I'm on that point, let me just point out that the way that capitalism, which is the economic model of the United States and Europe, the values that undergird that economic model are individualism, materialism, competition, and the domination of non-white peoples by white folk. And, of course, all of that is done under the rubric of tremendous violence. So that's the value system that we find ourselves immersed in. What we and Ulu and others who are in the liberation movement are struggling to bring about a society where the values of Ma'at and the Nguza Saba are the real values that guide the way this community takes care of its business. So that becomes important for us to understand, this idea of participating in these business structures, in these business enterprises, guided by the family kind of atmosphere and practicing the values of the Nguza Saba, you know, the unity, the self-determination, the suffrage, you know, the work in responsibility, the cooperative economics, and so on, and Ma'at. That's what we're seeking to build, the kind of community that thrives like that. Now, let me also say, to kind of put this in, to give a practical example of why this becomes important. Recently, we saw where the state of Texas got hit with severe weather, and it knocked out power to the entire state. And so for 3, 4, and 5 days, many people were out of by the residents in the state of Texas collectively. Because one of the things that the deregulated energy market in Texas did not do, they did not winterize the system to withstand extreme cold weather. And yet any weather person could have told them, well, you've had a history of extreme weather events at least once every 10 years. So this is not like it never happened before. No, it happens with rather consistency. But because they have put the profits in their pocket rather than winterize the system, now when these severe weather events take place, the masses of people are left in the cold, literally, in the cold, in the dark, and many lives were lost because of an economic system that's based on individualism, competition, materialism, violence, and greed, and the domination of others. So the masses of the people in the state of Texas have no voice in how their utilities operate. That is the whole point that Ulu is working to help our people understand. We want these systems that provide the services that people need in order to live. Our argument is that each of these entities has to be group-owned, collectively owned by the community, and that every person in the community has to have a voice in how these businesses operate. And I'm quite sure if the people in Texas had been sat down 3 years ago and said, and the leaders of the utility had said, hey, look, y'all, we're probably about to have a major weather event, and we can expect that the temperatures are going to go way down. And if we haven't winterized this system, we're going to be out in the cold and in the dark for who knows how long. And even after the electricity comes back on, you might have to boil your water for another 2 weeks because of all the debris and the bacteria that would have creeped into it while the power was down. Now, we want to put it to a vote. Do you guys want to winterize the system to prevent that from happening, or you would rather not do that and just put the profits in our pocket? I would suspect that the majority of people, had they been given that choice, would have said, let's winterize the system. But in a capitalist economy, the people are not given that choice. And so the point that becomes even more critical in my thought, Brother Thurman, is this. We don't talk a lot about global warming. And every time something like the Green New Deal gets mentioned, the rich folks start jumping up and down, hollering and saying, we don't need that, it's blah, this, and whatever the third, to the side. But as you and I live day to day, month to month, year to year, we've seen wildfires raging across the state of California and that part of the country. We've seen tornadoes and hurricanes in other parts of the country. We certainly are reminded of Katrina every time we see hurricanes coming up out of the Gulf. So these severe weather events are going to be happening with even greater frequency. That's the future, whether we want to admit it or accept it or not. Global warming has changed the weather patterns on the planet, and the planet is reacting to those changes in ways that threaten the ways that we have become used to living. So all of us have to put our antenna up and say, you know, 2021 is different than 2000. These weather events are going to be coming fast and furious, and we have to position ourselves in a way that we can adjust and adapt if they happen. Or better yet, we have to change the way that we're using energy on the planet so we don't wind up killing ourselves. But the current economic system doesn't allow us to have these kinds of conversations. Instead, we're just being herded from one extreme crisis to the next, and everybody is scared to death, looking at each other sideways, fighting with each other over the drop of a hat. And meanwhile, the rich are getting richer, and Elon Musk is sending rockets off to Mars because that's their exit strategy. when the Earth collapses, they're going to be out of here. But meanwhile, the masses of us that are left here, we're going to be standing around wondering, oh, my God, what are we going to do now? And so our position is now is the time to build this economic infrastructure that's based on sanity and that is sustainable. Let me pause there, Brother Thurman. There may be some questions.
Yes. Family, very serious points has been made, including the last few minutes talking about the weather. And you can join the conversation by calling 929-477-2789, 929-477-2789, and press the number 1 on your telephone keypad. And, Brother Auntie, related to the weather, can you still hear me?
Yeah, I hear you fine.
Oh, good. Related to the weather, the our topic tonight is Ujamaa economy, the only path to African liberation. And with that in mind, the Ujamaa economy, the only path to African liberation, Brother Auntie, have you got any vision of us doing the moving forward collectively and for the communal good, how would that help us position ourselves in terms of what has happened in the recent past with the weather and the expectation that there's going to be much more severe weather? What would the Ujima economy properly organized and we properly become a part of that collective, of that community, that familyhood? How would that help us in terms of the situations in Texas? And if you would just hold that point, I want you to respond to it. I just want to see if we can take a short music break.
Certainly.
All right, Brother Umpty, I think we're not going to take the music break because something in the system won't allow the music to start. And so if you got some thoughts on, you mentioned the Texas situation and the severe weather and that people suffered in the cold and a whole lot more people actually perished than it's been publicized. And so how can the Ujima economy, us collectively, communally, in the familyhood fashion, join in to that path? How would that help us in terms of these weather situations?
Brother Thurman, you raise a very important question, a critically important question. Global warming is brought about by the increase of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, and not only carbon dioxide, but other gases that are the byproduct of burning fossil fuel. So that the only way to avert climate catastrophe is to immediately change energy sources from fossil fuels to renewable energy. In other words, to get off the oil and the gas and the nuclear, and to move to solar and wind and geothermal, other forms of renewable energy. Now, this is not an academic conversation. The climate scientists have been warning of this, of the need to do this, since the late 70s. And Exxon and the other oil conglomerates have also known about this because they did their own research. But rather than help begin to organize the human species to make the transition from fossil fuel to renewable energy, they chose instead to maintain their profit. And so now we've reached the position where 1% of the world's population control more than 70% of the world's wealth. As a matter of fact, three men, Musk and probably Warren Buffett and maybe either Bill Gates or Jeff Bezos, their wealth combined is equal to about 50% of the wealth of the world. And so we find ourselves governed by an economic model that is based on the use of oil and gas and nuclear energy. Not only do we use oil to as an energy source, it is so ubiquitous that it is also the primary ingredient in the agricultural industry. In other words, pesticides and herbicides and the whole pharmaceutical industry, many of those pills and drugs have oil components in them. The plastics that are polluting the ocean, all of these are derivatives of the chemical byproducts of oil. And so Mother Nature is trying to alert the human family to the fact that this means of creating energy and driving your primary economic activity is killing you. So the pharmaceutical industry, the industrial farming industry, and the fossil fuel industry together, those three industries, that really is the bulk of the wealth producing companies on the planet. So whether we're talking Big Pharma, whether we're talking about Cargill, whether we're talking about Exxon Global, these are the conglomerates that really control human activity on the planet. And they have reached the point now where everyone knows that we need to we need to eliminate our dependence on fossil fuel, and they're working overtime to drive fossil fuels even more so. So to answer your question then, Brother Thurman, it comes back to an Ujamaa economy would organize the human family to say, there are other ways of producing energy for ourselves. We're going to stop using fossil fuel today. And now the super rich, you know, you say something like that, they become apoplectic. What? You know, give up my portfolio? No. Meanwhile, the average person on the street, you and I, who get up and go to work every day, this would not be a big shift for us. If we get our energy from the sun and the wind rather than oil, you don't have a portfolio full of Exxon stock in it, I don't think. I know I don't.
Yes.
So masses of the people on the planet could easily make the shift to a sustainable economy. It's the super rich who refuse to give up their wealth that are driving us to the brink of extinction. And Ujamaa economy simply wouldn't do that. For example, something. Can you hear? Am I still being able to be heard?
Yes, I just want to let you know we've got a caller that got a question or comment when you're ready.
Okay. Well, let me just make this point. No, go ahead, take the call. I'll come back to that point later.
Okay. All right, we've got a caller with the last four numbers, 0673. Please give us your name and tell us where you're calling from with your question or comment.
Yeah, Hotel Brother, it's Kevlar calling from Gabriel Process City, known as Richmond, Virginia to many. I don't have a question. I just have a comment. I'm a co-sign some of the things the brother was talking about. When we talk about unity. Our ancestor, Dr. Benny, always told us stories, and some of these stories we should carry down to the next generation. He told a story about an African village where a person had a drawing for a lottery, and he won. It was $1 million. And he had a long line of people around the corner, right? And the guy in the back of the line said, what are people around here for? He said, well, Thurman hit the lottery, right? He said, who paid for the ticket? He said, Thurman, bought the ticket, right? But the money there, all of ours. And the guy said, I don't understand. He said, why is that? He said, because Thurman didn't come here by himself. The farmer bought the food. The teachers provided education. The preachers spiritual development. And when Thurman got ready to build a house, everybody in the village bought one brick. And Thurman got to build his house. So it's all of our money. So the guy said, well, how much money does Thurman get after everybody get their share? He said, probably enough for a day's meal. He said, a day's meal? He said, yeah. He said, but it sounds kind of strange, that type of thinking in the West, that sounds kind of strange. But in that scenario, everybody was taken care of. So you know when time came, you were taken care of. So in a collective responsibility, right, if you came to a large sum of money, it wasn't yours. It belonged to the village. You know what I mean? So I just want to add that part to it,
Beautiful. Thank you, brother. Thank you always.
That was powerful, Brother Thurman.
Yes, brother.
Very powerful.
Yes.
It brings up two quick points on that. One, talking about the production of energy, for example, where I live, there's the provider that that provides energy to our home is Snapping Shoals EMC, Electric Cooperative. But it's a co-op. Now, most people treat it like it's Georgia Power, but it's not. It really is a co-op, and it has an annual meeting, and all of the people who get their electricity from it have the opportunity to go to the meetings and voice their concerns. That's the difference between an Ujamaa economy and capitalism, right? Now, the brother made an excellent point, and he said it better than I certainly could have when he was talking about the collective nature of the wealth in our village. So, yeah, you got the $1 million lottery ticket, but everybody in the village is responsible for you even being alive. So when you redistribute that $1 million back to the village, that's just the familyhood. That's a family-centered economic model, right? In other words,
yes.
Because the village has loved you and nurtured you and taken care of you, and you love the village and nurture the village and take care of the village. So now we are sharing the wealth so that everybody in the village is taken care of. Now, the other point that his comment reminded me of and I wanted to make, there's talk now in Congress about whether or not the $15 an hour wage is going to make it into this COVID relief package, right? And the way, if you think about the way many in the news media talk about raising the wage to $15 an hour, it's almost like they're giving people something, you know. People shouldn't get $15 an hour. That's going to make them lazy. They haven't earned it. All of that crazy talk. And it is crazy talk. Why? And this is the next point that I want to make. Why the Ujamaa economy is the only path forward. The wealth that is at stake is created by the people who do the jobs. So whether we're talking Amazon, whether we're talking McDonald's, whether we're talking Walmart, whatever profits those companies are making, they are able to make that based on the collective labor of the people who work there. In capitalism, they pretend like the profits belong to the owners. In truth, when you really understand economics, the profits belong to the workers, and everybody who is a part of the team that produces that wealth should have a voice in how that wealth is distributed. They are not giving those workers anything. The workers are demanding a larger share of the wealth that they are creating. That's what makes that whole conversation sinful, in my view. They're pretending like somehow the workers are asking for something that doesn't belong to them. In truth, the workers have created whatever profits are out there in the first place, and they have as much right to a better distribution of that as anybody. Now, that's called in some circles socialism, and Lord knows we can't use that word. But if they have collectively created that wealth, certainly you can't hold them to $7.50 an hour, and the last time that was raised was 12 years ago. And now you're going to have the audacity to say that they can't get to 15 in one fell swoop. We've got to stretch this out over 5 years. That is horrible. That is absolutely horrific. And it's those people who make those kinds of statements only exhibit how damaged they are as human beings. That would never happen in an Ujamaa economy, because there's no way in the world that I'm running around here $100 an hour and have three or four houses, six or seven cars, and here's a woman working two or three jobs just trying to feed her children. That is inhuman. That's a sick society that would allow that to go on and not critique itself and be ashamed that it even did that. And that's why the brother's example was so poignant, because it brings in other values. In other words, this community raised Brother Thurman. They nurtured him. They educated him. He is who he is because of all that they have poured into him. And so this idea of reciprocity, that only comes about in an Ujamaa economy. There's no reciprocity in capitalist thinking. It's get all you can and can all you get and sit on the can, always. And so it has reached the end of its usefulness. And it has become so irrational that now it has turned in on itself. And it is dooming its own citizens to being trapped in the dark in sub-freezing temperatures with no heat and no water. Surely it's time that everybody wakes up and says, something's wrong with that picture.
Oh, yes. Brother Unkti, got a question.
Sure.
Yes. As you were continuing to talk about the freezing weather and all, does Ulu, in the Ulu near future, are there any plans that would bring forth with our building this this Ujamaa economy with a large, huge influx of us participating? Does Ulu have anything in the future, in the near future, that would be able to help people in the weather situations, just like people open up shelters to shelter people when they've lost power? Does Ulu have any thoughts of being able to help our people, our collective, our communal members in those kind of situations?
It does, because Brother Thurman, and you can help me fill in some of the blanks on this question. What Ulu does is it builds the infrastructure. It builds the relationships. It builds the enterprises that are able to provide whatever services we as a people need. So just think in terms of everything as you sit in the space where you are right now, whether it's the lights, whether it's the furniture, whether it's the blinds on the window, whether it's the table, whether it's the carpet on the floor, whether it's the snack food that you're eating as you're listening to the program. Everything that we need as human beings can be provided cooperatively rather than in a capitalist system. Does Ulu have plans on the drawing boards? Well, we've certainly talked about how would a Ulu cooperative provide energy to our people? How would we organize ourselves to provide food so that it would be healthy, that it wouldn't be filled with pesticides, and our people could have access to fresh-grown, whole food that is healthy and nutritious. So everything that we need can be provided once we create this economic infrastructure. And let me say just this one other idea, Thurman, and I'll come back to your question for you to help me also with this. The reason why it is imperative, this is not just a good idea. It is imperative that we build this Ujamaa economy, because when we build an enterprise and it's collectively owned rather than privately owned, what we have done is transferred the means of production from a few 1% hands to the masses of our people. In other words, everybody on this call, if you are already a member of Us Lifting Us, if you're thinking about becoming a member of Us Lifting Us, you're going to share this with friends. Each person that comes into this cooperative enterprise becomes a collective owner of this enterprise. And Ulu itself is an instrument or a means of production. And the thing that why this, in my mind, is so important, Brother Thurman, is that Amil Carr Cabral said at a conference in Cuba, he said, national liberation exists only when the national productive forces have been completely freed from every kind of foreign domination. In other words, when our people begin to be collective owners of the means of production, then and only then do we now have the sovereignty and the power to return to making history. If we do not have control of the means of production, we are a footnote in somebody else's history. We're not making history. History is being made around us, over us, under us, through us. But we're not making the history. And so it's important, Brother Thurman, I think, to answer your question, we have to create the mechanisms that then can provide the things that our people need. Right now, the only mechanisms for the most part that are available to us are capitalistic mechanisms, and they are based on the exploitation of the people who work there. That's the problem with capitalism. It exploits and commodifies everything and everybody. The moment you tell the employer, yes, I'll take this job, I see it pays $15 an hour, you have signed up for a form of wage slavery. The only way that that situation can be averted is you become part of an ujamaa economy. And so two things happen. Yes, you initially also get the $15 an hour job, but quarterly or every 6 months, you also get a profit dividend from the surplus value that the company creates. So you wind up getting paid twice. And that's how we extricate ourselves. We get ourselves out of being continually exploited in these capitalist structures. So the long way around to answer your question is ULU has a number of projects that we are engaged in. We're looking at this engineer in Kenya has designed or developed a means of taking recycled plastic, mixing it with sand granules, and creating bricks. And the bricks are even stronger than the concrete bricks that you and I are familiar with here in the United States. And so we're looking at creating a company that's collectively owned that can also take recycled plastic and create bricks. The bricks, in turn, can be used to produce shelter. Again, what makes it exciting and unique in my thought process is that it's being done collectively. It's being done cooperatively, and we're not exploiting our people. We're not exploiting the earth, and we are providing a needed good, bricks, so that we can build shelter. Did I answer your question, Brother Thurman, or is there another aspect of it that you want to explore more?
Yes. One of the things that certainly came to my has been on my mind in terms of ULU has in the near future plans is ULU Mart, and you mentioned growing our own food and. So we need a place to receive that. How would ULU be able to help the family when it comes to that?
Well, you're right. The ULU Mart was designed precisely for that purpose. A, we would provide a market for black farmers. The problem black farmers run into, even more so than the challenges that they face in just food production, is that after they have produced it, they don't always have access to a consistent market where they can bring their produce and get it sold and not have it spoil and then they lose revenue. So the part of what we do through the ULU Mart is to create a farmer's market where black farmers can bring their produce to a market and consistently see that product moved. The other point on the farmers market was to organize our communities so that there are community gardens in every community. We had Brother Rashid Nuri on several months back, and he was just talking about how important, in other words, the only way people can have sovereignty is they have to be able to feed themselves. You know, so if whoever's feeding you, that's the sovereign part. If we're not feeding ourselves, then we are ceding our sovereignty to whoever it is that provides our food. So food production is a huge question that we have to answer here in North America as well across as well as across the African continent. We have to organize and get back to being able to produce our own food. And it's done more effectively and more efficiently if it's done through a cooperative as opposed to some outside privately owned company who's in that marketplace, and their driving motive is profit. That's where human family gets into trouble, when every service that's provided to people is done with profit as being the driving idea. And we can look at our communities and see that every day. Many of us have lived in communities where Macy's used to be a major department store. But as the economy has shifted, a lot of those malls that were anchored by Macy's stores have been gutted because Macy's pulled out. And the only reason Macy's pulled out, it wasn't because they weren't making money. They pulled out because they weren't making the profit that they thought they could get by putting that money in another form of business. Same thing with the grocery store. They talk about certain communities that are food deserts. It's not that the major chains couldn't operate stores in those areas. They just choose not to because they can make more profit on the north side of town. And so we as a community, as a people, are sitting in the midst watching all this activity go on around us, not realizing that these are people who don't even like us, who are making life and death decisions about the quality of life that we and our children are going to enjoy or not enjoy. Participating in ULU gives us the opportunity for the first time in a long time to start making those decisions again for ourselves by operating our own businesses and benefiting from them collectively, because we are mutual and joint owners in these businesses. So that's why ULU is the Ujamaa economy. We simply have to do that. There is no alternative for us. And the good news is, and the last point that I want to make, Brother Thurman, is this. We don't have to beg anybody for this. We don't have to go down to the Capitol and demonstrate. We don't have to march around anybody's business and boycott. We don't have to write any legislation. We don't have to get on the phone and call any congressperson. We start this process simply by making the decision to pool our money into our own businesses. Simple as that. And you can get into the process for as little as $50 and $50 a month, $50 for the annual membership fee, and then begin working on the purchase of your co-op unit over a period of time that works for you. But if we do not build our own economic institutions, then we will continue to be at the mercy of those people who do not like us, and they will destroy the planet before they will operate businesses in a sustainable fashion. We simply cannot allow that to happen. I'm excited because what's going on the continent, things that moves that other brothers and sisters are making, we see now a confluence of activity that's making cooperative economics, Ujamaa economy, the only game in town that makes sense for people who plan to survive. We are on the threshold of a multi-trillion-dollar enterprise, and the only thing that's slowing us down is we're scratching our heads wondering whether or not we should do this. And the truth of the matter is the ancestors are standing up, applauding us, saying, now is the time. This is the move. This is what we have been waiting for. Mm. All it is this is a conversation amongst ourselves. All we have to say, are you ready, brother? Are you ready, sister? Let's do this. Let's build this. We've done the homework. We've figured it out. And we have an exact methodology. That the only thing that's missing is our brothers and sisters coming forward and saying, yes, we're ready to pool our money to build a new future for ourselves and our children.
Good word, brother, good word. Family members, we've had a powerful conversation tonight, and ideally, like myself, you were taking notes. It's essential that we do this. And Brother Unti said that if we don't build our own, we will continue. And I would suspect that if we don't build our own, we will continue forever to be at the mercy of others. Take these notes, and if you're not, if you are part of Us Lifting Us, come forward and help us. Us Lifting Us needs your assistance in all aspects of the operation and the future operation of Us Lifting Us. And if you are not a member, go to usliftingus.com and take a look at the information that's there. And also you can leave your contact information and someone from Us Lifting Us will contact you and speak to you in terms of any of your anything that you do not understand or how we can help you to have a clarity of the basics of Us Lifting Us and how you can become a member and become more knowledgeable about our Ujamaa economy and the familyhood. Brother Unti, we thank you so much for a powerful message with so many vital points tonight. And we thank you, family members, for being on the call tonight. And we definitely are excited that you were there taking notes. And we are going to continue this conversation. And we have the Dare to Win call every Thursday night from 9 p.m. until 10 p.m. And look forward to our next conversation next Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And remember, once again, our economic liberation requires our participation. Thank you, Brother Unti, and thank you, family.
Thank you, Brother Thurman.
And we do have a... Yeah. Okay.